Good afternoon. It is 2:02 p.m. We are here today, January 4, 2018, in the OPA hearing room, Suite 907 of the DNA building in Hagano, Guam, for the motions hearing of OPA PA 17-011, JMB Modern Tech versus the Guam Community College. Presiding over the hearing today are hearing officer Delia Wolf and public auditor Doris Flores Brooks. For the record, also present from the Office of Public Accountability are Llewellyn Terlahi and Vince Duenas. Will appellant JMB please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Good afternoon. Daniel Berman on behalf of the appellant, JMB, Modern Tech, and the representative today. Introduce himself.
Jim Bangayan.
Good afternoon.
Will purchasing agency GCC please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Good afternoon and Happy New Year. Rebecca Wrightson with Cabot Mantononia, and we represent the purchasing agency Guam Community College, and I do not have any representatives with me today.
Thank you. We may proceed.
And Happy New Year to everyone.
Happy New Year, Doris.
Okay, so this is a motion hearing, and before the APA are two motions that have been filed, and they are the motions of GCC. There's the motion to dismiss for lack of jurisdiction, or alternatively for expeditious disposition. And then there's also the motion to strike the amended opposition that was filed by JMB Modern Tech, correct?
That's correct.
Correct.
And there are no other motions that have been filed that haven't been resolved?
Not that I'm aware of.
Correct.
Okay. And if we could start first with the motion to strike.
Certainly. Thank you. And as you've noted, we have we filed a motion to strike the appellant's amended opposition. When we were here on December 4 and discussed scheduling matters, and then the hearing officer issued a scheduling order, at that time it was decided that the only brief that was going to be filed regarding GCC's motion to dismiss for lack of jurisdiction or alternatively for expeditious disposition was going to be GCC's reply. And the hearing officer issued a scheduling order on that same day, December 4, saying that GCC's reply brief would be due on December 11th. Then unexpectedly, on December 6th, the appellant filed an amended opposition to the opposition to amend the opposition that had previously filed, I believe, on, December 1, I'm sorry. And then on December 6th, filed an amended opposition, with which then left GCC with two business days to complete its reply, because the Friday, December 8th was a holiday. Now, the scheduling order, the hearing officer, like a court, has powers that allow to strike improperly filed documents. And we've set forth in our papers the authority that grants the statutes that grant, the regulations that grant the hearing officer this authority, and that would be 2GAR 1209, subsection D, to strike improper filings. And we believe this filing is improper, and the briefs go into a lot of detail about why this amended opposition should be stricken. And if you have questions on that, I guess I don't necessarily want to belabor this, because we are, the primary motion today is the motion to dismiss or alternatively for expeditious disposition.
Yes, we have the motion and we have the opposition that was filed by JMB Modern Tech. I think both of them were well briefed, and if there's anything, Mr. Berman, that you have to add to your opposition to the motion?
Thank you, Your Honor, hearing officer.
I'll say Your Honor, that's fine.
If I might just refer you to as Your Honor, it's just my custom and habit. Primarily, we're standing on our briefs that we filed to the court with the OPA on December 18th. I would just highlight in my page 2 of 7 that in the alternative, we submitted a just cause, excusable neglect, points and authorities, that it was GCC who started this speedy demand to end the case without any further proceedings. They wanted expeditious rulings, they wanted immediate relief, and when I read those demands of GCC, I rushed to to file an immediate opposition before even the first pre-hearing, so that when I appeared before you for the first time, I would at least have some opposition in writing filed and served. Having then gone through the scheduling conference, my notes in the later order weren't exactly consistent. I thought from my notes that we hadn't discussed the filing of opposition, but reading the order, it was clear that opposition was due on X day, and then or it was filed on X day. And their reply, that is GCC, would have substantial time to respond to it. Now, my amended opposition had one page added. That's all that changed, was one page, and an emphasis on three cases, one of which is an OPA case we think is watershed of importance. And in response, their reply memorandum briefed everything on JMI Edison. So I submit, and I think GCC shows no prejudice in having been given one more page of legal authority to respond to. We stand on our briefs.
Thank you. And just so there's no confusion, Ms. Wrightson, did GCC file a reply to the opposition?
We did file a reply to this opposition, and that was filed on December 27 in accordance with the scheduling order for all oppositions being due to other motions on December 27.
Okay, I actually didn't have a chance to review that. Is there anything in your reply that that you would like to address that you haven't already, or that's not in contained
in the motion? Yes, in response to Jane B. has said good cause and excusable neglect. Well, those are the standards for filing, for a motion for leave to file an amended motion or an amended opposition. I would note for the record that J&B did not ask for leave to file anything and did not even let GCC know that there would be an amended opposition forthcoming. And also in response to that GCC expedited all of these procedures and, well, that's what OPA's regulations call for. This is a procurement appeal. Procurement appeals are supposed to move swiftly, and in fact, when you file under the rules that govern this appeal, 2 GAR section 12104 subsection 9 says, a motion addressed to the jurisdiction of the public auditor shall be promptly filed. GCC promptly filed its motion to dismiss for lack of jurisdiction on November 16, the same day that we filed the agency report, the statement answering the allegations of the appeal, and a few other items I think we also filed on that day. So as far as expediting something, I don't think that their GCC can be faulted at all for trying to expedite this appeal, because that's what procurement appeals are supposed to move.
Okay, thank you. And if we can move to the motion to dismiss.
Certainly. So as you mentioned today, we're here today for GCC's motion to dismiss for lack of jurisdiction, or alternatively for expeditious disposition, which is difficult to say, of this appeal. And the facts underlying this case are relatively simple. There is not much to it. GCC issued an IFB for the construction of a forensic DNA lab. Now, two bidders responded to that IFB by submitting bid packets, and those bidders were J&B, the appellant, and Pro Pacific Builder Corporation. The bid opening occurred on July 19, 2017. On July 20, one day after the bid opening, J&B submitted a Sunshine Act request to GCC asking for a copy of Pro Pacific's bid packet. And J&B received a copy of Pro Pacific's bid packet on July 27th. There's no dispute about this. It's in the record, it's in their notice of appeal. It's very, very clear when J&B received a copy of Pro Pacific's bid packet. Then on July 24th, GCC forwarded the two bidders' bid packets to its architect for review. The architect noted some issues with both of the bid packets and recommended that GCC seek clarification, which is commonly done in procurements. And GCC sought and received the clarification that it needed from both J&B and Pro Pacific. On September 7th, GCC issued a notice of intent to award to Pro Pacific and a notice of non-award to J&B. Then on September 20th, 55 days after J&B received a copy of ProPacific's bid packet, J&B lodged a protest, and every issue raised in that protest is grounded solely on facts in ProPacific's bid packet. And you can find the protest at tab 4 of the agency report. And you can see from tab 4 that everything in the protest is grounded on ProPacific's bid packet. In fact, J&B attached copies of pages of ProPacific's bid packet. Now, the law that governs the timeliness of a protest is very clear. And that statute is 5 GCA section 5425 subsection A. And it says that any actual or prospective bidder, offer, or contractor who may be aggrieved in connection with the method of source, selection, solicitation, or award of a contract may protest to the chief procurement officer, the director of public works, or the head of a purchasing agency. The protest shall be submitted in writing within 14 days after such aggrieved person, the person who thought they might be aggrieved, knows or should know of the facts giving rise thereto. Now, in conjunction with that statute, the regulations governing a procurement say the same thing. And it also, the regulations also say that a protester under 2 GAR 9101 subsection C2, that the subject of a protest, that a protest, protesters may file a protest on any phase of a solicitation or award, including but not limited to specifications preparation, bid solicitation, award, or disclosure of information marked confidential in the bid or the offer. Now, there's no question that J&B's protest is untimely. Every issue raised in J&B's protest is grounded on facts that lie within ProPacific's bid packet. There's no question that J&B received a copy of ProPacific's bid packet on July 27. There is no question that J&B filed its protest on September 20. Now, the public auditor has held that if protests are not timely submitted, the public auditor lacks jurisdiction to review the appeal. We've cited the case of Guam Webs, which is also GCC. We were here for that case as well. And in the Guam Webs decision, that protester raised 4 issues in the appeal. 2 of those issues were grounded on facts that the protester knew about at the bid opening. The protester did not file a protest based on those issues 14 days after the bid opening. The public auditor declined to review those issues because the protest was untimely. So, like in Guam Webs, we have the same situation here. There's no question when J&B knew about the facts that are underlying its protest, just like in Guam Webs. And so Guam Webs' decision will control the timeliness of this protest. And this protest is untimely. It should have been filed on August 10. It wasn't filed until September 20. And even assuming the appellant has raised, if we're assuming that the amended opposition will be allowed, the appellant has raised JMI Edison as a public auditor, one of the public auditor's decisions that somehow is going to impact the untimeliness of its protest. Well, JMI Edison doesn't help J&B at all. JMI Edison, when you read the decision, it's very clear. There's nothing in JMI Edison that says when that protester knew of the facts giving rise to its appeal. And under the appellant's reading of JMI Edison, you would have to read out of a statute. You'd have to completely ignore several words within 5425, 5 GCA 5425. And if I may, this is just a copy of 5425.
Your Honor, I'm going to object to the distribution of supplemental briefs when her very motion to strike our briefs was based on some form of belated production and filing. Now she's just walking around serving new briefs of legal authority. She can withdraw her motion to strike if she wants to, but if she wants to violate the very rule she stands on, I think it's inconsistent.
And I would, if I may?
Yes.
If I would point out that 5 GCA 5425 is cited in our briefs. it's quoted in our briefs. This is not anything new. This is something that I'm using to demonstrate the language instead of reading the statute again.
Okay, I do notice that the handout, though, has certain words
stricken. Those are the words that would need to be stricken to read the statute the way that J&B wants the statute to be read.
It's entirely new.
Okay, and your objection is noted, Mr. Berman. Thank you.
Thank you.
So you would need to read several words out of this statute. You would need to read out the word or perspective in front of bidder. You would need to read out the language of method of source selection or solicitation and say that you can only file a protest when a contract is going to be awarded. And that's not true, and we all know that's not true, and J&B knows it's not true because J&B has protested other bidders' bids. We were here, I think 4 months ago with GCC, who was, and J&B was protesting the cancellation of a bid. Not the award of a contract, the cancellation of a bid.
But when we look at section 5425A, it also says any actual or prospective bidder, offer, or contractor who may be aggrieved. And then in the next sentence, it says the protester shall submit writing, the protest shall be submitted in writing within 14 days after such aggrieved person. So it seems that section 5425A requires that any Protestant, any protester be aggrieved. And is a prospective or actual bidder, offer, or contractor aggrieved simply by a defective bid being made by a competitor?
And I would say yes, because the language of the statute says who may be aggrieved. And then when you look at the language of such aggrieved person, refers back to the person who may be aggrieved. And we've cited in our opposition brief as well that there is in Ohio, I'm sorry, it was New Mexico, has a very similar wording in its statute. And on page 6 of our reply brief, in the case of James Hamilton Construction, which is from the New Mexican Court of Appeals, the Court of Appeals of New Mexico said that in connection with speaks to the entire process of the procurement from the solicitation to the award. So,
I'm sorry. It seems though that if a competitor gives a defective bid, that the protester could actually, instead of being aggrieved, could actually be benefited because perhaps the protester or could assume that the competitor's bid is going to be rejected as non-responsive. And so it could be problematic interpreting aggrieved at that early stage before there's any government action in the form of a government decision at any phase of the procurement. And so when a bid is made, It seems that a competitor's defective bid could actually help and not necessarily aggrieve perhaps J&B Modern Tech because they're thinking that PBC's bid is actually helpful to them because PBC would be out of the picture.
And that's an interesting point and perspective, and what I would point out is that protesters are not allowed to sit on their hands and wait. The procurement law doesn't provide for that. When something is spotted awry in a procurement, the protester has a duty to act. The protester is not allowed to just sit on their hands and sit back and wait and hope that everything turns out okay. In which case, there would never be every procurement would go on forever because the protesters are just sitting back and waiting. If there's a problem with the procurement, which is in addition to a solicitation, if there's a problem in a solicitation, which is what we were here for last month, was an ambiguity in the solicitation, if there's a problem with the solicitation itself, the protester has a duty to speak up.
It seems, though, that that whoever files a protest should at least have standing, should at least be injured somehow. And if there's no injury to be suffered, well, isn't it fair to say that a protester or a party, a bidder, isn't injured yet until its bid has been denied or award has been made or preliminarily or finally made to a competitor?
And I would say that the protester would be aggrieved at the time a perceived defective solicitation is submitted by another bidder. The procurement laws are not set up necessarily to benefit the protesters. They're set up to benefit the agencies and the government in getting the best deal possible in the swiftest manner possible.
But if a protester has to guess as to what the agency is going to do in response to a perhaps defective bid, it can delay procurement because it would put the burden on the bidders to file protests even before the government has a chance to make a decision on whether or not the bids are responsive at all to the solicitation. And so that could actually result in more delays to the procurement, couldn't it?
Well, and I think that the flip side of that would be if there is a problem with a bid, that another bidder's bid, when the bidder perceives that problem, if they don't raise it, now when we get to the point of where we're getting ready to award a contract, now we're doing corrections in the other bidder's bid. So I think that if the bidder is going to be protesting, the bidder needs to be protesting at the earliest stage possible so that everything can be expediently resolved instead of waiting until the end and then filing its protest, which is why it's 14 days of new or should have known. And OPA has interpreted the statute to mean that in Guamlebs. And other bidders have interpreted the statute to mean that. In fact, J&B has interpreted the statute to mean that.
So based on your interpretation of the law, would bidders, actual or prospective bidders, offerors, or contractors be required to protest non-government actions?
Absolutely.
What other examples other than bids, competitors' bids?
Then other competitors' bids, if they witness another bidder talking with the procurement officer about the bid, acting ethics violations, those sorts of things are stupid. Those matters should be brought to attention at the most immediate time possible. And if there was a problem in another bidder's bid, there should be time for the agency to act. And maybe the same problem appeared in four bidders' bids, and the solicitation itself was ambiguous and needs to be canceled and resubmitted.
But wouldn't, I'm sorry, you used the example of improper discussions?
Mm-hmm.
That would be improper discussions with the government?
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
That seems to be more of an example of government action, protesting government action.
Or if another bidder, too, if one bidder found out that two other bidders had colluded in putting their bids together and the pricing, okay. That's something that should be brought to the attention immediately. Shouldn't that bidder who knows of this collusion or suspects it or has facts that would support it, shouldn't just sit back and wait and sit on its rights and wait and see if the contract is going to be awarded in hopes that GCC would discover this collusive effort, and then when they're not awarded the contract, jump up and down and yell collusion between two other bidders.
So would you agree that that if the OPA were to accept your interpretation, that the actual or prospective bidders, offerors, or contractors would be required to, or would, yeah, but would be required to protest any defective bids that they have actual or constructive knowledge of prior to any kind of government action on the bids?
Yes, I would say so. And in fact, I would point out that the public auditor has said so in Guamlebs.
I'm sorry, do you have any other arguments regarding this portion of your motion? lack of jurisdiction?
I believe that, unless there are any other questions, based on everything that the law and the undisputed facts in the record of this case, GCC submits that this protest was untimely. It's very clear that everything was grounded on, every issue in the protest was grounded on items in ProPacific's bid packet, which J&B received a copy of on July 27. And I would also point out that J&B is not required to get a copy of a bid packet. But it did. And when you do that and you know of the facts that are underlying your protest, you have a duty, an obligation to raise them. If you sit on your rights, you lose it.
But J&B, at the time that it received the FOIA response, didn't have all the facts, the facts that GCC would award the procurement to PBC. Isn't that correct?
Well, and I would say that J&B is not protesting GCC's award to ProPacific. When you look at their protest, every salient issue, every salient fact underlying this protest comes from ProPacific's bid packet. J&B did not protest how GCC evaluated the bids, which was one of the issues in Juan Webb's that was not untimely. J&B did not protest any other matter that GCC did. Every salient fact and every substantive issue in this protest arises from PBC's, from ProPacific's bid packet. And the protest can be found at the agency report at tab 4. And it's when you know of the facts that are underlying your protest that the statute and the regulations say you have 14 days to file your protest. Based on the law, based on the record, GCC respectfully requests that this public auditor dismiss this matter for lack of jurisdiction because the protest is untimely. And if there, did you have any other questions on the lack of jurisdiction?
None at this time. Thank you.
Now, GCC in the alternative has moved for an expeditious disposition of this appeal. The procurement, and I would note for the record that J&B's opposition to this part of the motion is non-existent, I guess. They filed an opposition to the motion to dismiss for lack of jurisdiction and did not address the expeditious disposition of the appeal. And under the procurement regulations, provide that the hearing officer can hold informal conferences to settle, simplify, or fix the issues in a proceeding, or to consider other matters that may aid in the expeditious disposition of the proceeding, either by consent of the parties or upon such officer's own motion. And that's found at 2 GAR 12109 subsection A. And the public auditor looking to this regulation, has decided that if there are no disputed facts in the record, then certain items will not be taken to a hearing. And that was in Re Carondo, and there were two decisions out of In Re Carondo, which is at OPA PA 15-009, and we've set forth this all in our motion as well. Now, we believe that there is no need for a formal hearing on this appeal, because there are no material facts in dispute. Everything is in the record. A hearing at this point, there's no factual disputes that need to be decided. The issues in this appeal are matters that are governed by the facts that are already in the procurement record. The first issue, substantive issue that's raised in this appeal, is the mathematical error, the perceived mathematical error in ProPacific's bid packet. And this is set out at the IFB contained a detailed chart for nearly 80 different costs that went into the bidder's total price.
Madam Hearing Officer, I'm going to object to the merits arguing the case. This is a motion to expedite the appellate process, which was resolved by the schedule order. I don't even think that's before you anymore. It's already got a schedule order. Now, going to the merits of the arguments is inappropriate.
We'll allow the parties to argue their motions and the oppositions.
So is this summary judgment now? We're going to argue summary judgment.
At this time, we're still having the hearing. What I wanted to ask you, Mr. Berman, is whether or not you still want the hearing. I know that you did file a request for the hearing,
mm-hmm.
and GCC filed a waiver. So it's your position that despite the, there's still a hearing that should occur, and that I also wanted to ask what you would be presenting at the hearing, why it should not be resolved without a hearing.
Thank you, Madam Hearing Officer. The hearing is scheduled. We all were here when we discussed the scheduling of it, and the purpose, for among other reasons, is to review that part of the evidence that was not produced in the FOIA Sunshine Act response, in particular the TRMA architect report, which told GCC the Pacific is a higher price bid. So they disregarded their own architect's report that Pacific is a higher price bid, and they started calling them up, apparently. We'll figure that out in the hearing. So by calling them and emailing them, what price do you want to bid? What price would you like to go with? That's totally violated the procurement law. So I think we need to get into that.
Is it your position that there is an issue as to material facts that they are disputed?
Apparently, the TRMA architects reported that the Pacific bid was the high price bid is now disputed by GCC. I've read their briefs. They think that they've awarded to a low bidder.
And
what they've done is they awarded to the high bidder.
Find it necessary to the appeal to call witnesses?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
And if I may, all of that is contained in the procurement record. The architect's report is very clear what happened. ProPacific's bid, there are 80 different costs that went into the total base bid. Over 80 different items did not total ProPacific's base bid. There's no dispute on that. It's in the record. It can be found at tab 6 on the agency report is where the costs are laid out. It's very clear in the record that there were 80 different costs. There's no dispute that nearly 80 different items did not total ProPacific's base bid.
Well, in light of the fact that parties have the right to request a hearing and GMB has requested the hearing, and it seems to me that there is an argument as to the facts, and they do feel the need to call witnesses. We believe that we will. We're inclined to at this time deny that portion of the motion for expeditious resolution without the hearing, and we will be going forward with the hearing on the 17th. As to the motion to dismiss for lack of jurisdiction and the motion to strike the amended opposition, we'll be filing a decision on that. We're going to aim to file that by next week. I'm sorry, Mr. Berman. I think I jumped ahead regarding the jurisdictional portion. You still need to oppose that if you have anything to add.
Thank you, Madam Hearing Officer. My opening remarks are I'm in complete agreement with the hearing officer's questions to Ms. Wrightson. They're spot on. And the one issue presented is so limited and so brief that I do agree expeditious disposition of the motion to dismiss should be made, that it's only what is the trigger? What is the trigger to start the 14-day clock? As Madam Hearing Officer pointed out in her questions to Ms. Wrightson, no duty to protest arises when there's no violation of procurement law. Because to submit a high-priced bid in your own bid is not a violation of law. It's to be applauded. Thank you, competitor. You've now bid twice of what I bid. I just wait for GCC to give me my award, because I'm a low bidder. That's all you do. You just wait. You just be patient. Second, without a violation of law, there is no trigger. It's only GCC's action that is the trigger. And Ms. Wrightson perfectly misframed or misstated the position of J&B. The J&B protest is exactly over the award by GCC. It's not over the PVC bid packet. Just as Madam's hearing officer's questions painted for Ms. Wrightson, it is only to the benefit of J&B that Pacific is a high price. Pacific didn't sign their bid packet. Pacific didn't get the insurance. Whatever Pacific did wrong, that's just for GCC to evaluate. So before September 7, 2017, there's no knowledge of J&B that GCC violated the procurement law. Stated another way, as Madam Hearing Officer has done, J&B is not aggrieved by Pacific's high bid price. So we were just not aggrieved at all, not prejudiced. We were just a fortunate recipient of a competitor that bid too high. There's no arguments here that the solicitation was problematic. We're not appealing the IFB, the nature of the terms, they were understood. It's only the award to Pacific that is the subject of the appeal and the protest. Our briefs pointed out in the ruling in the appeal of JMI Edison that those facts are relevant. There, the hospital rejected JMI's bid for nonconformity. But yet, the OPA never dismissed the appeal because the JMI appeal only was taken the next day when the June 7 award went to MedFarm. That's the trigger. And that's why I led my remarks of this is a one-issue motion. What is the trigger? And the trigger is the award. And in JMI Edison, squarely found at page 4 that the JMI protest was timely. The protest is based on the award to MedFarm. It is not based on the rejection of JMI. And it was supported by 4 grounds. Identically here, JMI's protest is based on GCC's award to Pacific and the many grounds, the leading ground of which is the higher unit price of Pacific, calculated based on the unit price rule of procurement law. And when TRMA issued its architect's report and told GCC that, it was over. The procurement had ended. They should have just awarded it to the low bidder, but they didn't. They made phone calls, they wrote emails, and that's what we're hearing about. It's a motion to dismiss, so you accept everything that's well pled by the appellant as true in order to get past the motion to dismiss. And in doing so, there's only one way to read JMI Edison. The motion is not well taken. It's not meritorious. It's a one-issue rule of law. When does the trigger exist? And the trigger existed at the award. The Pacific wrote a backwards, upside-down, high-bid price package. It was only to the benefit. And there was no agreed situation to J&B. And J&B only was shocked and surprised that the award went to Pacific and not J&B.
GCC has cited the Guam Webs case, and can you explain how that case is relevant or irrelevant to the facts here?
Thank you, Madam Hearing Officer. In the Guam Webs case, fundamentally, I was surprised that GCC was proud to publish and announce it. It was so damaging to GCC's conduct and how they mishandled a procurement and reprimanded them directly on its terms. I can see where GCC now wants to almost use as a boomerang and shoot it back at the OPA, saying, oh, look, you know, you can't just beat us up all the time. We're going to use it at you. So it seems to me to be sort of almost a revenge use of Guam Webse. But anyway, it did find that most of the grounds that were asserted by the appellant were timely, not untimely. The one ground that was not timely, and we submit this in the footnote in our opposition, both the first opposition and the amended opposition didn't change, that we think probably the decision is not well taken, and the one argument of Juan Websey, the appellant, that was found not timely. Because I think there was no way to know for the appellant that GCC would violate the procurement law until the award was made. Just the same as here, there's no way to know what GCC will do to violate law until they actually disclose a violation of law. So in a nutshell, it's in the brief, and I'm just summarizing to you now.
So you believe that the parties are similarly situated here and in the Guam Webs or Websey case?
Well, those facts...
As to the untimeliness part of the decision.
I thought the facts were fairly different, the Guam Websey and these facts. Our facts at J&B's here instant case, it's so simple. It's just that's a high bid price, and he's the low bid price. There was far more going on in Guam Websey about just a far more factually complex situation. I think this instant case is far more simple and analogous to JMA Edison. But my footnote at page 6 of 8, footnote 4, I say respectfully, in light of the fact that GC's violation of procurement law only was known after its notice of award and honor to the bidders, even this Juan Websey single issue was timely appealed. So there's one issue that was held not timely. All the other issues were held timely, improperly so.
On the issue that was held untimely in Guam Webs, was the appellant in that case protesting government action?
As I'm reading back the understanding of that case, apparently there were a submission of two proposals with this bid. And so that was the nature of the wrong, let me put it that way, of the winner. And so the finding was made that as soon as you knew two proposals were bid, then someone should have spoke up. But to my way of thinking, to be straightforward, Madam Hearing Officer, GCC could have fixed that and just not awarded. I mean, if someone's violating the law in front of you, that's for GCC to address by awarding properly. And when they awarded improperly, that was timely appealed, timely protested and appealed. But it's not the situation here. Submission of two proposals. On the face of Pacific's proposal, it would look okay on its face. I mean, they spaced it properly. It's just one proposal. It's one price. A price that's too high. And some blank lines are in there, some things that should have been submitted weren't, all for GCC to straighten out by a proper award, which they failed to do.
You have also cited the JMI Edison case?
Yes, ma'am.
And I think that one was in your amended opposition.
Yes, ma'am.
And do you see that case, that the decision issued in that case was... differs from in any way from the Guam Webs decision to find untimely the protest?
I would say that the JMI Edison squarely holds and makes clear as it can possibly say it that the 14-day period does not begin until there's notice of the award. That's the square black letter law holding of JMI Edison. The 14 days begins when the notice of the award went out. And that's against the facts that JMI would have known the day before that their bid was rejected. And that also could well have been taken as a 14-day trigger, but it wasn't. Instead, the ruling quite properly said 14 days runs from the notice of the award. And I think that's consistent with the federal procurement cases we've cited to the panel, and we cited one more case that the federal authorities, quote, resolve any reasonable doubt in favor of the protester on issues of timeliness. and that's Irvin and Associates.
Is that case, though, inapposite if there is no FOIA request, or I guess if the appellant in the JMI Edison case didn't receive a copy of the bid?
I like the question because it is possible that the FOIA response could have shown collusion, could have shown unethical behavior between the government and a bidder. If that had happened, if they'd seen that, then they should have protested right away. But that wasn't in the FOIA response. That the behavior of the parties was no collusion, there was no ethical violations, there were no conflicts of interest found in the FOIA response. All that was in the response was the Pacific bid packet. And had they known, J&B, that there was collusion, that would have started an earlier clock running.
Thank you. Well, at the outset, I would like to, unless I'm misunderstanding J&B's argument here, what J&B seems to want to address at this hearing and what they're basing all of these proceedings on are something that they never protested. It appears that the only issue that J&B wants to go to a hearing on or thinks that we need to proceed with is the architect's evaluation of the bid packets. J&B didn't protest this issue. They didn't send a FOIA request asking for the bid evaluation documents. We'd be in a different ballpark if J&B had sent, once J&B had received the notice of intent to award to Pro Pacific, if J&B had requested, sent a FOIA request or a Sunshine Act request to GCC saying, hey, I want to see how you evaluated Pro Pacific's bid costs. What happened here? J&B didn't do that. And in Guam Webs, the public auditor said, if you don't protest an issue, it's not properly before the public auditor. OPA can't hear it. You need to go through a protest first. J&B didn't protest what GCC did with any of these bids. J&B protested ProPacific's bid packet. These are the facts underlying J&B's protest. And they did not file, J&B did not file a protest within 14 days. And also I would point out I'd like to point out that in JMI Edison at paragraph 6, the public auditor said regarding the timeliness of JMI Edison's protest, at paragraph 6, the second sentence, the protest grounds were not based upon the rejection of JMI's bid. The protest grounds were based on when the hospital advised of the award to the other party. And that's what JMI Edison protested. J&B protested, and again, I would point out that JMI Edison doesn't say when the protester learned of the facts that were underlying those the protest. If the protester submitted a FOIA request, a Sunshine Act request needs to be resolved within 5 days. They would have gotten a copy of the bid packet immediately thereafter and filed the protest once they had that information. So JMI Edison doesn't help J&B for the timeliness issue because we don't know when the protester learned of the facts giving rise to the protest. Did they file when JMI Edison received the notice of award to that it was going to be awarded to MedFarm? Is that when they filed, requested a Sunshine Act request for the bidder's bid? We don't know. Because JMI Edison doesn't tell us when the protester actually knew of the facts giving rise to that bid. Or giving rise to that protest. And the statute very clearly states that the facts that trigger the 14-day timeline are the facts The protest shall be submitted in writing within 14 days after such aggrieved person knows or should have known the facts giving rise thereto. The salient facts that are the grounds for the protest are what triggers knowledge or perceived knowledge, constructive knowledge of when you know of those facts is what triggers your 14-day timeline.
Now, in this case, JNB appears to be protesting a number of issues, including, the bid price, the base bid price. There appears to be an inconsistency between the base bid price and the unit prices. And if you were to look at the unit prices, the total is actually greater than the amount that's stated as the PVC's bid price, base bid price. And so JNB is making the argument that its base bid price is lower than the sum of those prices. I'm not looking at the stated base bid price of PVC. And then other arguments are also made, including PVC lacking certificates or other attachments or submissions as part of the award. So it seems that as to the failure to include required documents, it appears that they're making a non-responsive argument. And then regarding the price, it appears that they're making an argument assuming that they're responsive or not, that PVC's price was actually higher and that JNB was the lower price bidder. And so you can term one it seems that they're making arguments that the bid is defective or that the bid is higher, and so they're not the lower bidder. And so would JNB be required to protest? Would they be an aggrieved bidder? Just looking at the bid, given as the FOIA response, and seeing that the unit prices total is greater than the base bid price of JNB. Are they an aggrieved party if they see, just limited to that issue of the price? Would they be an aggrieved party just seeing that the PVC bid is higher under their interpretation?
And I would say yes. They would qualify under the statute that they would need to be, who may be aggrieved, is what the statute says. And if you have to raise the facts, that they're raising facts based on a bid packet that they had possession of 55 days before they launched their protest. They were aware of the salient facts underlying their protest, which is the trigger. You're aggrieved in connection with the method of solicitation, source selection, or award of a contract. At the earliest possible stage that you know or should know of the facts you are grounding your protest on, you have a duty to raise it. That's what the law says. That's what the law requires. The trigger is when you know of the facts underlying your protest. Those are the facts that make you aggrieved. At that point is when you become aggrieved. And as far as Mr. Berman's suggestion that the TRMA architect's evaluation of the bids, JNB didn't protest that. And it's perfectly common for clarification of bids. And if JNB is going to take issue with the architect clarifying issues in the bidder's bid packets and say that that can't be allowed, then JNB can't be awarded the contract either. Because the face of its bid packet said that the length of time it was going to do to complete this project didn't meet what the IFB required. They weren't going to complete the project in the proper amount of time based on what they submitted. So it's not uncommon for the agency to seek clarification. And also, the law allows for corrections, mathematical errors, obvious mathematical errors. And I would also point out that these are not unit prices that are contained within the cost. It's different areas of the, it's a division of the specifications.
Okay, well, there was also the issue of the, what you've noted as the correction.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't, I saw it, but I haven't memorized when the clarification or correction was made as to the PVC bid. And so was that before or after the FOIA response?
It was before.
Okay, so the clarification.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, the clarification was sought on July. I'll find the exact date for that, of that for you.
It would have been after the bid opening?
It would have been after the bid opening. Yes, it would have been after the bid, the bid opening, where GCC runs its procurements on an IFB. All of the bidders, the bid packets are opened in full display. The prices are announced. They run through a checklist of all the items for each bidder's packet. And anyone who attends the bid opening would know of the pricing. So the clarification was sought. And under the law that allows a mathematical correction, a minor mathematical correction, is two GAR section 3109, section little m 4 capital C. And I would also note that even though...
Well, I'm sorry, we don't want to get into the merits right now. I just wanted to ask about the timing.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Madam Hearing Officer, the timing of the TRMA report is at page 4 of 8. Is dated August 14th, 2017, footnote 3, in my opposition to motion to dismiss.
Okay. Thank you.
So clearly after the FOIA response, which your point was.
And I would note also that JNB's not protesting what TRMA did.
It's never given the FOIA response.
And I would also point out that JNB didn't file a FOIA request for those documents.
So it was secret.
Was not secret. It was attainable through a FOIA response.
Okay. Well, if the parties don't have anything else to add, you can conclude the motion hearing now. And as I stated earlier, we'll be issuing a decision. We'll aim for next week on the motion to dismiss and the motion to strike.
Thank you, Madam Hearing Officer.
The time is 3 o'clock p.m. We're off the record.